Okay, the mer- the,
okay,
the lines
well,
are merged.
Great, thank you. All right, welcome everybody. This is David Corus, Board Chair. I'm going to call the meeting to order at 12:01 p.m. Before I go into roll call, I just want to note first, with his leaving the board, Don Frost, I want to thank Don for all the time and energy that he's put into the Port Authority. Obviously, he was a leading intellectual as it comes to all policy issues, maritime, and that perspective will be missed, but I have no doubt that he will continue to be thinking about our activities and will continue to send ideas to the CPA and to the board, and we certainly welcome that that industry input. And then I want to welcome our new board member appointed by the House Speaker, Larry McHugh. And so with that, I will begin with roll call.
David, a point of order. I'd like to make just a brief statement about Don also. If
yeah,
you don't
please,
mind.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Sure.
You know, I just realized this morning I first met Don about 45 years ago in New York City. And I really want to tell just a little bit about Don, because I don't think everyone realizes it. But Don has worked within the commercial maritime industry for 60 years. He's considered an expert in many areas of the industry. MARAD and other government agencies have consulted with him. He has worked to create or improve port authorities in Los Angeles, Sacramento, Fernandina, and Tampa, along with many others. He's a member of the Society of Marine Arbitrators. In our business, maritime agreements between ship owners and operators and charterers that have disputes are settled. They're settled by arbitrators, not in court. If someone doesn't like an arbitrator's ruling, I have rarely seen a court challenge it. And most of the arbitrators sit in London or New York. Don is a founding member of the Connecticut Maritime Association, which has become one of the largest maritime associations in the world. And Don has been, as we all know, very generous with his knowledge and time, offering both to almost anyone who asks. He is a graduate of SUNY Maritime, SUNY Maritime, the State University of New York Maritime College, and he remains as an active alumnus with the university. And ironically, that brings us up to where we are now and what had happened. Don was involved in a project to obtain funding from New York State to create a maritime chair at the State University in New York. He was working with other alumni, one of which I believe was taking the lead on the project, who was from Seabury. Don was invited to a dinner by this person, and he had no reason to believe it was for anything other than to discuss their project. He said when he saw the executive director of the CPA and his wife arrive, he was surprised. It had become a social dinner. Don said nothing was discussed about the CPA when he was there. And sadly, nothing was discussed about the project for SUNY. Don fully understands the ethics ruling finding Seabury responsible for giving gifts to the CPA staff, the wife of the executive director, and also a board member, which was him. Don does not feel this was a gift. He thought it was. If he thought it was, he said he would not have attended. But he thought he was invited for other reasons, basically the SUNY project. I know his mind at the time was on his wife of over 50 years who was fighting a battle with cancer, a battle she ultimately lost. Don is naturally very upset about what has happened, but he accepts it and respects Representative Ritter's appointment filling the seat. Don's term expired in 2020, and when a term expires for a board member, they can stay on until they are either reappointed, someone else is appointed to the seat, or they decide to leave on their own. Many times Don has wanted to leave the board. He was not happy with what the CPA had become. But I've always asked him to stay on. We really need his experience and knowledge for the good of the maritime community. I don't think this is a loss for Don, but this certainly is a loss for the CPA, our maritime industry here in Connecticut, and the people of the state in general. And it's truly a shame we've lost this great asset, yet others who did accept gifts have suffered no consequences. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thanks, Dave. With that, I will move into roll call in no particular order. John Flores.
Here.
Brian Thompson.
Here.
Paul Hinch.
Here.
Parker Wise.
Here.
John Johnson.
Here.
Carlo Leone.
Here.
Dave Perillo.
Here.
Larry McHugh.
Here.
Judy Scheifel.
Here.
Grant Westerson.
Here.
Tom Gill.
Here.
Felix Reyes.
I am here.
Great, thanks. Tom Patton is not going to be in attendance. Alexander Daum is not going to be in attendance. And I'll give it a try. Mayor Justin Elker. Not in attendance. Okay. Moving on to the next item on the agenda, approval of minutes from the January 21st regular meeting. Is there a motion to approve?
June 21st, right?
Yes, correct.
So moved.
Move by Grant. Is there a second?
Second, Parker.
Second by Parker. Any discussion? Comments or requested changes to the minutes from the June 21st board meeting?
Larry McHugh will abstain.
Noted. Thank you, Larry.
John Johnson will abstain.
Brian Thompson as well.
Okay. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, noted abstentions are Brian Thompson, John Johnson, Larry McHugh. Any other abstentions? Okay. Next item on the agenda is public comment. Ulysses, please open the line and invite anyone to speak. And I believe folks need to hit star six to unmute themselves.
That is correct. The line is now open. Anyone who would like to speak, please enter star six to unmute your line.
Good afternoon. My name is Lou Casolo, city engineer for the city of Stanford. I'd like to speak.
Yes, go right ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting us to make a few comments this afternoon. I just want to say that from where I'm sitting, we've been very good partners together between the city of Stanford and CPA over the years. I say this as we have been recipients of three pretty sizable grants, one in 2015, another in 17, and in 2021. So I'm really thankful for the work of what we've done. I also would like to say thank you for your consideration for the three 2022 grant applications that are before you today. And with that, I'll allow someone else to speak.
Great. Thank you for the comments, Mr. Cassolo. Yep, please go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. Yep, please go ahead.
Can I say a few words?
Yes, absolutely.
Hi, my name is John Pinto. I'm president of the Connecticut Harbor Management Association and also the chairman of the Application Review Committee of Norwalk Harbor, Harbor Management Association. And again, I'd like to sort of piggyback on what was just said from Stanford, that we truly appreciate certainly the work of the Connecticut Port Authority and maintaining these ship grants that Norwalk has also been a recipient of. A few years back, we received money from the CPA regarding our visitors dock area for paving and for dredging, and it certainly worked out very well for us to get that facility managed for allowing vessels to come into Norwalk and support Norwalk. We are very appreciative, again, for the Connecticut Port Authority maintaining the ship grants. As you know, I'm maybe a little bit biased, especially when it comes to small ports and mid-sized ports in Connecticut. Again, I speak probably from a being a biased position that I think the small and mid-sized harbors are as important, maybe a little bit more important than the three major ports of New London, New Haven, and Bridgeport with regard to the economic value that the small ports and medium-sized ports have in the state of Connecticut and the economy of the state of Connecticut. But again, I'm very appreciative of the ship grants availability, and Norwalk has certainly been appreciates the opportunity to certainly apply and to the ship grants for further funding. And with that, I give back the floor.
Great. Thank you for those comments. Any other members of the public wish to speak at this time?
Yes, I wish to speak. My name is Bill Rock.
Yeah, please go right ahead.
Can you hear me? Okay, I'm the chairman of the Stafford Waterfront Harbor Management Commission. I've been there for 11 years and vice chair for six. Stafford, like so many towns, has been repurposing industrial waterfront property for non-industrial mixed usage with strong, often recreational public water dependent component. Stafford has a beautiful natural harbor which extends from the mouth of the river about 3 nautical miles upriver. Now, about 1 mile from the mouth is a 77-acre industrial site, which is in the process of transitioning. Now, to facilitate this transitioning and improve access to many other marine establishments in the harbor area, the commission has spearheaded two dredging projects to dredge the Federal Channel to 18 feet deep and 200 feet wide. Now, the important part here that I want to mention is the funding was provided by the Connecticut Port Authority, largely through the efforts of Joe Salvatore. Joe has been kind of an angel to a lot of smaller harbors. And I want to emphasize, like John did, the importance of the Connecticut Port Authority to continue to direct a significant amount of resources to the ports other than the big three for the betterment of all activity, all marine activity in Connecticut. And we look forward to continuing with the further future projects. That's it.
Hello.
Great. Thank you very much for your comments.
Norwich, Connecticut. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Tucker, go right ahead. Tucker, go right ahead. Tucker, I think we lost you. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, can hear you now. Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. I live out in the country, as you can tell. I've had the pleasure of working with the Port Authority, and I've offered testimony when the very beginning in the London when they first started up, and I'm very much in favor of what's going on in the state here in the London, thinking that we're at the end of the Thames River in Norwich. We have a harbor, and we have received two grants from the Port Authority. And I've had the pleasure to Joe Salvatore's office is in Saybrook. And as it turns out, my broker is living in Saybrook. I have had occasions to stop it from time to time. a great deal of knowledge for us and wisdom and guidance as to what we should be doing and how we can be doing it to improve what we're doing in the Norwich Harbor. At the present, we're putting in some new docks, and I would ask for the Port Authority, through the guidance of the Ship Grant Small Harbor Improvement Program, to continue their support to finish this job that we started in 2019. COVID has not been a help to us and or to you. But I'm very thankful for this opportunity that we can improve these docks. They've been in the water for now 30 years, and they do have to have some, they have to be replaced and for the safety sake of the community and the people that use it. And I thank Mr. Salvatore very much for his guidance and how he's been very open and willing to help Norwich improve their harbor. And thank you very much for this. I yield my time back.
Great. Thanks for the comments, Tucker.
Blacker, anyone else? Comment, please.
Yep, go right ahead, Mr. Blacker.
So clearly you guys at the Port Authority are popular among all the people that you're handing money out to. It's not surprising to hear. In regards to agenda item number 4 or 5, I hope the executive director could touch on some comments he made at the Finance Committee meeting earlier. He repeatedly referenced 1.5 employees that, you know, I'm not sure whether that was some type of reference to, or I was hoping the executive director could clarify whether Andrew Levine is still employed by the authority, because I didn't know if his comments were an indication, and you know, the lack of Andrew at this meeting was any indication of you know, whether he's still employed. If he is still employed, whether there's going to be any consequences for him accepting the illegal gifts, as Dave Perillo touched on in his comments, the consequences to Don Frost were swift and significant in terms of the damage to his reputation. You know, I would think that it would, there should be some discussion of, or there has to be some consequence for Andrew Levine accepting those illegal gifts. So also in the Finance Committee meeting today, the first time that I can recall, or the first time that I have heard David Corus acknowledge that federal authorities have requested and the Port Authority has been responding to the DOJ request for information. At a previous meeting, Dave Perillo had asked that the board be allowed to see any subpoenas that have been issued, be they by the Attorney General or the DOJ. I think that the public, you know, definitely deserves to see those documents, and that there should be public discussion of, you know, what the status of the Attorney General and the DOJ investigation are. So in regards to agenda item number 6, the State Pier infrastructure improvement, I'd like to note that 52 dead horseshoe crabs were found next door at the state boat launch. A 6-year-old or 6 or 7-year-old kid reported on this and reported it to the DEP. The DEP has an investigation ongoing. Employees at Kiewit also said that they had found dead horseshoe crabs on site and were aware of it and concerned about it. So whether Marlon Peterson, you know, is willing to give an update on the status of that DEP investigation, I think the press should be aware of that. Related to agenda item number 8, the pilot commission update, it's actually, you know, you still give us a pilot commission update, but you don't, there's no more Coast Guard report. At meetings, there always used to be a Coast Guard report from Don Callan. Ask why that was removed from the agenda, because
there really should be an update from the Coast Guard, specifically in regards to the Ports and Waterways Safety Assessment, which was supposed to be released a month ago, and documents increased risk associated with the development that you guys are pushing forward with. In regards to old business, you guys have discussion on future meeting format. I assume that's whether we're ever going to get back to meeting in person and having the chance to, you know, to face each other and speak face to face. There should also be discussion on the future board format. Don Frost was removed from the board. He was replaced by Lawrence McHugh. As Dave Perillo referenced, Don Frost had maritime experience, and that is something that is largely lacking on your bloated and oversized board. There's just a serious lack of maritime experience on the board, and I also think that the people on the board, there's a number of them that have been there for too long, that have been present through all of the problems of the Port Authority, and a number of them with their terms expired, and the legislature needs to basically clean house. You have John Johnson with a conflict of interest, has been there too long. Lonnie Reed's husband, Parker Wise, has been there too long. Dave Perillo, for all of his maritime experience, and I have to say, of anybody on the board, probably the best judgment of anybody that I've seen, he's been there too long. Grant Westerson, he's been there too long. So I think you guys need to have, there needs to be some discussion about not just the format of the meetings, but the composition of the board. You know, you have to ask, why is Tom Patton, whose LinkedIn explains, you know, himself as a healthcare executive and private equity advisor, why is he on the board? So I'll just close by saying that, I think that the organization and the State Pier Project were founded on dishonesty and bad judgment. Nothing you guys ever try to build on that foundation is going to have any integrity, and you're never going to escape the constant and endless, scandals that just keep coming one after another. So I think you really think you guys should, that the Port Authority should be broken down and completely rebuilt. So that's all I have to say.
Great. Thank you for your comments. Any other members of the public wish to speak at this time? Any other members of the public? Okay. Before moving on, I'll just respond to one point that Mr. Blacker made, just to make sure that the public is clear that the Port Authority Board has no say in its scale or composition. That is defined by our governing legislation and the state legislature and the appointing authorities that populate the board. Next item on the agenda is the executive director's update. Ulysses, I'll hand it over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone. I trust you are all enjoying your summer, and I can't wait to have an opportunity to meet you. If there is an event in your community or a moment when you have some downtime, please let me know so we can make an arrangement for a meeting of some sort. When it comes to today's director's report, as a backdrop, I invite you to reflect and think about the fact that we only have 3.5 employees, including myself, plus a very talented and versatile employee on loan from the DOT that several members of the public just spoke of today. Thanks to the leadership, however, of financial director Veronica Calvert, and I'm going to first of all start with our financial management area. Major improvements under her leadership have been made in our financial management and accounting systems. The finance office staff, consisting of 1.5 employees, huge division, continue to work with the Office of Policy and Management on the requirements for entering purchase orders, vouchers, and processing payments through the state core financial system. They update the project budget report monthly to record transfers among projects, new contracts, new purchase orders, and disbursements made through CORE by the State Treasurer's Office. The monthly project budget report is provided to the CPA Finance Committee and Board. OPM has also been working with staff on using the CORE STARS program that provides program analysis for payroll and SHIP projects. 9 SHIP projects were added recently to the CPA's accounting system, QuickBooks, to mirror the information contained in CORE. Bank reconciliations are up to date through June 2022 for Essex and Webster bank accounts. Parenthetically, that's 29 individual bank accounts that are reconciled on a monthly basis. A considerable amount of time is spent researching and resolving payment issues for contractors and municipalities. For example, our finance staff recently researched and resolved the executive director of the New Haven Port Authority's request for assistance in returning over $233,000 of unexpended state grant aid and funds provided by the Department of Transportation in 2016 to conduct a navigation improvement feasibility study for New Haven deepening of the main ship channel. That office continues to meet also weekly with OPM on the state bond allocation Excel file developed by OPM to account for all deposits and withdrawals for prior years and created also an up-to-date inventory list of all CPA fixed assets, which will help with determining the CPA's depreciation expense each year going forward. This exercise resulted in the development of a useful life table for items over $5,000 which need to be depreciated. All of this activity is being conducted while simultaneously responding to a mountain of requests for documents and reports for just not one audit, but two audits. Yes, the state auditors of public accounts are conducting the biennial audit for fiscal years 2020 and 2021. Additionally, Cohn Resnick is conducting CPA's fiscal year 2022 audit, which is anticipated to be completed by the end of October. The auditors have been understanding of this limited staff bandwidth and have been really great to work with. However, there is an additional financial management action I would like to note that I forgot to include in my report to the board, and that I also advise this morning the Finance Committee. The CPA has a 2018 Ford Explorer. I have determined that as one of our operational cost-saving measures to sell the vehicle for a variety of factors. Given the limited use, due primarily to the post-pandemic hybrid nature of the workforce and the workplace, and the opportunity to save an operational cost such as gas, but also cost of insurance and preventive maintenance, and the fact that used vehicles are currently selling at a premium, I anticipate that we will see a respectable return on the sale. We are working with the Department of Administrative Services regarding the DAS's surplus property program, which is the legally authorized agent in the state for the disposition of all usable surplus property. We are in the process of turning the vehicle over to DAS for auction. The proceeds of the sale, minus the minimal processing and administrative fees, and an auction fee of 12% will be returned to the CPA. Let me turn now to Pier 7 at Fort Trumbull. GZA, a geotechnical and environmental services company, continues permitting coordination with the state and federal entities. A joint permit application submission is expected later this month. GZA's project will cover permitting, plans and specifications for bidding and coordination with CTD. Parks continues. GZA submitted, that is in August of 2022, on behalf of CPUA and Connecticut Deep Parks, a request for permission from the landowner to submit a joint permit application to Deep and the Army Corps of Engineers for the rehabilitation project. The purpose of the proposed project is to improve the pier's existing infrastructure and enable temporary docking of the U.S. Navy's amphibious transport dock class vessel for safe haven during storm events. Project work includes reconstructing and/or replacing existing elements of the pier. When it comes to the New Haven Harbor Navigation Improvement Project, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has received its full funding under the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act and recently updated on June the 8th that they are internally coordinating with the cable firm to relocate the cable from the channel deepening limits. The Corps is also coordinating the mobilization of a contractor to conduct further boring work to identify rock ledge as well as plan survey, marsh design, and development and execution of the memorandum of agreement for the design phase with the CPA as the project sponsor. The next meeting is August the 23rd to get an update and briefing from the Corps on the following: legal counsel review, questions regarding the content of the design agreement and certificate of authority, and overall project schedule and scoping. When it comes to the Connecticut State Dredge Team, in previous report to the board, I advised that Joe Salvatore and Crystal Kallenberg were the co-chairs of the Connecticut State Dredge Team, consisting of representatives from Connecticut Deep, DOT, CPA, EPA Region 1, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. You may recall that the Connecticut Port Authority requested and received $3 million in planning assistance to prepare a comprehensive plan for dredge material disposal facility siting in Long Island Sound in support of long-term, safe, and efficient commercial and recreational navigation in the state's ports and harbors. The team is anticipating a response soon from the Army Corps of Engineers regarding the planning aid to states and the terms and scope of the statewide dredging study. A tentative meeting is scheduled for early fall. When it comes to SHIP, you heard a great deal from our municipalities about SHIP and Round 3. On April the 27th, CPA issued a request for applications for project funding under the third round. The small harbor improvement projects, and then as you are aware, municipalities and or adjacent to waters of the state may apply for matching funds to conduct projects that improve the infrastructure or management of their facility and waterways. Joe Salvatore and I, but mostly Joe, held several pre-application consultations with the municipalities, including Norwich, Brantford, Stamford, Norwalk, Chester, Southport, to go over project details and offer suggestions for the application process. On August the 8th, an evaluation team consisting of two board members, Brian Thompson and John Johnson, along with Joe Salvatore and yours truly, we reviewed the responses. A total of 10 municipalities are being recommended for your approval at a total board of about $5,900,000. With your indulgence, I'd like to ask Joe to provide a more detailed description of our round three program later in the program. Let me move on now to an item that has been requested for us to report on, and that is educational conferences and commercial opportunities. Let me start with the North Atlantic Port Association, NAPA, as it is referred to. It's an organization focused on port administration and operations and represents commercial ports between Norfolk, Virginia, and the Canadian Maritimes. This range is divided into 10 port regions. Each region is represented on the NAPA board of directors by the number of board members assigned to that port region. There are 25 board members in total, and Connecticut has 2 seats on the board. Those seats are filled by myself as interim executive director and Andrew Levine. NAPA members include port authorities, governmental agencies, terminal operators, stevedores, nonprofits, consultants, academics, maritime lawyers, ships agents, and others. NAPA holds 2 meetings each year, one in June and one in December. In June of this year, Andrew and I attended the association's semi-annual board meeting and conference in Baltimore. Port Authority representatives from Virginia, Maryland, New York, and New Jersey, Massport, and Maine were all in attendance, as well as a representation from the ports of Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Wilmington, Baltimore, and Norfolk. The meeting was a great opportunity to learn more about activities taking place in neighboring ports, including ongoing port development initiatives, port operations, and administration successes and challenges. Innovation opportunities. The conference had a wonderful presentation on the innovation of use of dredge material, and also state and federal legal issues. Those were also addressed. We also had the opportunity to tour and witness up close the heavy lift capacity and capabilities of the Port of Baltimore as part of the conference program that may transfer to what we are creating also in Connecticut. What stood out perhaps the most to me, though, was the excitement and stunning interest from the group around what we are accomplishing here in Connecticut, particularly given our small staff. It was wonderful to update the group on our progress and vision for State Pier in New London and our efforts supporting the harbor deepening in New Haven and maintenance dredge in Bridgeport. The increased reservoir of commercial and professional contacts, access to an incredible range of experts and expertise, and an opportunity to immerse oneself educationally in an industry or enterprise is incalculable in terms of the benefit to the state and any individual who attends. When it comes to the Reuters OSW conference in Boston, the authority remains actively engaged in supporting domestic and international maritime-related business development inquiries, primarily focused on the state's deep-water ports, including inquiries, though, coordinated by the state of Connecticut. The authority has been increasingly involved in coordination efforts led by DECD, Advanced CT, and other state, local, and regional entities to promote the unique economic development opportunities enabled by the state's investment in the state pier facilities improvements and heavy lift upgrades, as well as the near-term opportunities associated with offshore wind assembly operations at the facility. Last month, the authority and our coalition of state partners participated in the U.S. Offshore Wind 2022 conference in Boston, hosted by Reuters Events. This was the authority's 3rd year participating in the event and its 2nd alongside DECD and other state partners. Chair David Corris participated in a panel discussion during the first day of the conference focused on ongoing port infrastructure developments alongside representatives from the Port of Virginia, Massachusetts Port Authority, New Bedford Marine Commerce Terminal, and the Massachusetts Clean Energy Center. DECD Deputy Commissioner Alexandra Dahm participated in a panel discussion regarding interstate collaboration approaches to supply chain and local economic development, alongside representatives from New York State Energy Research and Development Authority and Mass CEC. Port Authority staff and attendees worked closely with Advanced CT, an exhibitor at the event, to provide information to attendees on Connecticut's investments in port infrastructure, the improvements taking place at State Pier, as well as the near-term operations relating to offshore wind, and the opportunities for maritime development statewide. As you can see, we are an integral part of a statewide intentional and coordinated effort to more aggressively and proactively attract a larger and more sustainable share of commercial opportunities on behalf of the state of Connecticut. Let me now turn to the coordination with state partners. The authority remains actively also engaged in supporting domestic and international maritime related business development leads, including leads and inquiries coordinated by the state. We have been increasingly involved in coordination efforts led by DECD, Advanced CT, and other state and local regional entities to promote the unique economic development opportunities enabled by the state's investment in the state pier facilities improvements and heavy lift upgrades. I'd like to now probably hold on my report regarding State Pier New London, as it's coming up also later on in the on the agenda. But I'd like to end by talking a little bit about our community engagement. Last month, the authority released a newsletter highlighting a variety of ongoing projects managed by the CPA. The newsletter covered the recent visit by U.S. Energy Secretary Granholm, as well as other recent stakeholder tours, and provided updates on the New Haven Harbor Navigation Improvement Project and the third round of the Small Harbor Improvement Projects Program. Although we are a small team, we are engaged with state and local community organizations and are committed to improving educational presentations, on-site tours for interested citizens, private, public, and community organizations. Just this month, we have provided tours for members of the UConn, Connecticut Sea Grant research staff and Washington, D.C. staff from Senator Blumenthal's office. In the coming weeks, we have presentations and tours planned for executives from prominent local businesses, the Thames Club, and the local.
I think we lost him.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's hold on, because if we lost him, that means we might have lost the public line as well. It sounds like the board is still on.
Yeah, I'm still on.
Yep. Me too.
Yeah. Me too.
Okay. Veronica, Joe, are you still on?
Yes, I'm here.
Felix, I'm still on.
Okay.
Paul's still on.
Okay. All right. Sounds like we got the full board, and it sounds like we got staff, but maybe not Joe, because Joe was probably in the same room as him. So it sounds like we've lost the office, and they tether us to the public line. So we definitely lost the public line. So we will hold tight for a minute, and I will try and get to Ulysses.
Hang on, let me bring them back in.
Okay. You're back, Ulysses?
Yes. David.
Okay.
You're there.
Yes. Yes,
I
we're here.
I don't know what happened.
Okay. Can you just confirm that we're still recording and the public line is still connected, and then we'll move
yes,
on to finance?
The public line is connected. And we're still recording.
Okay. All right, great. All right, Ulysses, thank you for the update. Any questions or comments for Ulysses on his update? Okay, moving on to the Finance Committee update. And since we're kind of moving on in time and it's the first month of the fiscal year, I'll be very brief. The Finance Committee met this morning at 10 o'clock. Excuse me. We went through the first month of the fiscal year financials. No surprises in there, obviously, this early in the fiscal year. We did talk a bit about, we now have in the Finance Committee package, which all board members receive, an update on all capital projects, which we're continuing to kind of rectify with the state accounting system, as well as an accounting of expenditures related to the State Pier construction project, as well as a breakdown of legal expenses. As I've mentioned at the committee, I think we're still tweaking that a little bit and going back through past invoices to make sure that it's properly accounting for the distribution of drivers, but it's about a third, a third, a third. About a third of our legal costs last fiscal year were due to our operating needs. About a third were driven by external factors, investigations, FOIA requests, et cetera. And then about a third funded through capital project funding were related to permitting and project expenses. The only other thing I'll note is, as I reported to the board at our last meeting, we discussed at our last Finance Committee meeting, and again today, a potential trip to Europe with our partners, Gateway and Ørsted and Eversource, to visit a comparable port in operation to that which is under construction in New London, as well as meet with some of the manufacturing team working on the turbines that are coming through New London and some of the barge operations team. So we're continuing to move forward with planning that trip for late September. We continue to anticipate costs commensurate with what was discussed at our last Finance Committee meeting a month ago, which is somewhere in the $4,000 to $5,000 range per participant. Anything that any members of the Finance Committee want to add that were present this morning? Any questions or comments from any board members on Finance Committee update?
Dave Perillo, I just had one comment on the trip to Copenhagen. I don't think we have a sufficient budget for travel. And I really suggest that the Finance Committee possibly amend the budget and bring it back to the board for approval.
Noted. We will take a look at that. Any other questions or comments? Okay, moving on to the next item. Ulysses, I'll give it back to you for State Pier Infrastructure Improvement Project update with Marlon.
Oh, good, good. With respect to State Pier in New London, currently 9 key areas of the project have construction in progress. 6 of the key areas are progressing on schedule. These areas include the central wharf, upland drainage, upland potable water, upland electrical infrastructure, and the northeast bulkhead and heavy lift platform. Consistent with the project schedule, the delivery berth located at the northeast bulkhead is anticipated to be substantially complete by the end of this calendar year. Furthermore, to date, there are no outstanding quality issues. However, 3 of the areas have experienced difficulties since the last board meeting, which include South Wall, State Pier Heavy Lift Platform, and the State Pier Tow Wall. According to our contractor, Kiewit, these difficulties that have negatively impacted our pile driving productivity are related to higher than anticipated rock elevations, obstructions, and the contractor's means and methods. Our contract administrator, AECOM, led by Marlon Peterson, has intensified its on-site supervision and in consultation with the contractor has developed a series of alternative solutions that are in process of implementation at each location. These workaround solutions include mobilizing additional equipment such as a drill rig, also equipment operators, working additional shifts, and replacement components such as the pile driving shoes. I remain optimistic that under the leadership of our contract administrator, Kiewit, and the entire project team, that the workaround solutions will restore the required productivity rates in these 3 areas to enable completion of the remaining east berth portion of the State Pier in early spring 2023. Substantial completion is targeted for February 28, 2023, and final completion June 1, 2023. Let me now turn this over to our contract administrator, Marlon Peterson, for more in-depth briefing. Marlon?
Thank you, Executive Director Hammond. Just talking about the areas that are moving according to schedule is highlighted. At the Central Wharf, what was at one time a very critical activity, nonetheless, the trade contracting team have delivered in excess of 90% of the fill material. It has been placed and enabling now the south wall anchor berm to be installed. At the same time or concurrent to that, that team has completed the vibro compaction, known as both double and single probe systems, except for a final wedge, which is a small body of water located adjacent to the new combi wall. Again, that item has moved forward very well and is now creating the footprint for subsequent infrastructure works. In the balance of the upland, we have stormwater drainage pipe and manhole structures being installed in Area 2. We will shortly be moving up into Area 1, which is the main, the new entrance to the facility. Also, potable and fire water installation is in progress, as is the underground electrical conduits and duct bank installation, which, for example, will be servicing the nacelle pre-assembly area. All throughout these subsurface excavations, we continue to manage the contaminated soil and groundwater facilities using both the Connecticut DOT and the Connecticut DEEP approved groundwater treatment plant. Moving to another key area is Executive Director Hammond mentioned the northeast bulkhead and the heavy lift platform. For those that can see the site as they travel past, we have driven 159 of the 30-inch diameter steel pipe pile that will create the heavy lift platform. The crews are continuing to provide the formwork the significant network of reinforcing steel and placing concrete for the pile caps, the beams, the tie rods, the heavy lift slab, and the perimeter curbs. All in, the northeast bulkhead and heavy lift platform is approximately two-thirds complete for its 515-foot length section. So again, this heavy lift platform, again, handling some 5,000 pounds per square foot, which is 5-6 times greater than what's standard for a container terminal, has been a very interesting learning curve for the entire team, and again, is setting a new standard for the type of heavy lift facility here in the U.S. So we look forward to completing it this fall as we head into the winter months, but also then replicating it over at the installation, or what's known as the east berth. Moving on to the south wall, again, that's the new wall that will connect the state pier and the previous CVRR pier. Those 42-inch steel pipe and sheet piles for the combi wall have been driven. We have started to commence the gravel placement within the pipe pile. We are also commencing the formwork across the top of those that will create the concrete cap, which ultimately then will connect into the balance of the central wharf. As mentioned by Executive Director Hammond, productivity at the south wall has been impacted due to two items, a hard lens of very dense material, as well as what we call obstructions, which are, in other words, very large boulders or granite rock that get in the way as you're driving or banging a steel pipe pile into the ground. The dense material, the contractor has utilized, for example, an H pile, much like it sounds. It's a pile that is in the form of an H as you push down through to dislodge a soil plug, which then enabled the pile to continue to be pushed down so it could be advanced to its design depth. In the case of obstructions, they have to remove the pipe pile, again, bring in either the H pile or another ramming tool to dislodge the whether it's boulder or granite, move it out of the way at depth, and then put the pipe pile back in and continue to once again drive it to its necessary design depth. That is being overcome at the south wall, and ultimately you'll see all those piles down at the same grade and as they put the concrete cap coming across. So, again, the south wall is advancing, and we expect that to be completed during the balance of this fall. Moving over to the two most important areas now, what we call the critical path, but the two at the state pier, it is its tow wall and its associated heavy lift platform, again, much like what we explained for the heavy, for the northeast bulkhead. At the state pier tow wall, we continue to remove the riprap that was underlying the previous use of that facility. We are also commencing probing, which is removing obstructions at depth, the existing mud line is at minus 20, minus 25, minus 28 feet or so. So the contractor removes those rock obstructions or concrete elements such that the tow wall can come through. The contractor commenced driving of the 42-inch steel pipe pile for this reach of the combi wall. However, much like the the south wall, it was impacted due to high rock elevations and obstructions at variable depth. As one of the workaround solutions, Kiewit, our contractor, has brought in a 46-inch diameter drill rig. It was mobilized in the month of July. That drill rig then commenced at the northern end of State Pier, and if you would, working out towards the Thames or in a southern way, that drill rig, for example, and according to the contractor's pictures, et cetera, ran into a rock obstruction that was some 5 feet in depth. So it tells you an idea of some of what they are working through. In order to continue and to improve our productivity, a second drill rig has been mobilized, and it arrived on site August 8th. So during the month of July and August, we've mobilized two additional drill rigs as well as a pile driving rig all along the state pier to improve our productivity and again achieve the scheduled completion dates of later this year. At the heavy lift platform, concurrent with the tow wall. Again, our contractor has been removing the existing concrete slab, removing existing timber piles, concrete caps, and steel sheet pile walls, all part of the previous existing infrastructure. We have been removing that. If you would, the final elevation of this platform will be at plus or minus nine. We are going down to an elevation of plus three, so taking out about six feet worth of elements. We then build back up, if you would, with the necessary compaction DGA material, ultimately to provide a 3-foot concrete pad and then the 3-foot of DGA, which will create this excessive, the 5,000 PSF capacity again. Anyway, after removing a great deal of this infrastructure, we again are driving piles. There's rows A through E, so there's five rows, and there's approximately 35 vents, we call it. So somewhere approximately 185 pile. These pile also are coming upon a tough driving regime as we hit the variable elevations of rock. The heavy lift platform is a combination of achieving a bearing capacity on the bottom of the pile, but also the pile has to have a certain tolerance and a vertical plumbness, if you would, because the pile, the beams, and the concrete deck all work together to create the necessary capacity for that platform. So it's a very intricate dance of ensuring that the constructed works are consistent with the design criteria, and we're moving through that process, if you would. And the key of it is ensuring that the pile is driven to its capacity. We are not achieving the productivity rates that we need to. Therefore, that's why the additional drill rigs and the additional driving rigs are now on site. So what we hope to do is over the next several months, the next several weeks, is get existing pile driving data so that we can then inform you at the next meeting with a revised completion date, not only for the balance of the areas that are moving well, but also have a revised date for this for the State Pier complex for this east berth. Any questions? Oh, and lastly, I guess from the public comment concern that was raised, the construction administrators, environmental specialists did respond to the concern that was raised. They did observe the horseshoe crab issue. However, no other significant mortality of other species, whether it be flora or fauna, was observed. Nonetheless, and as a next step, we will follow up with Connecticut DEEP and other federal environmental agencies, such as the National Marine Fisheries Service, for further information and insight, and we'll report that back to the board at the next meeting to better understand what the conditions were that may have caused such an event. Any other questions regarding the concrete or the construction activities at this time?
Thanks, Marlon. Any questions or comments from the board?
This is Flores. I just was wondering, what's the additional cost to us on these three problem areas?
We are in the process of working through that with the contractor with the additional equipment that's coming on site. One of the workaround solutions is extending additional days and additional shifts. So once we can confirm that the productivity numbers can be achieved, we can then work through the costs of that and bring that back to the board for your review and approval. We don't know that yet, as the equipment, as I said, just the last part of it arrived here just on Monday the 8th. It is now assembled. It started driving earlier this week. So we need to understand what its productivity rates are before we can make those decisions about how best to utilize it.
This is Dave Perillo. I don't have a question, but I do have a request for you, Ulysses, regarding State Pier. We've seen the cost unfortunately being updated many times. I haven't seen any type of update on anticipated revenue, what I would say return on investment, but let's say revenue that will be coming back to the State Pier. And I would like an update on that. The last numbers I heard through the first 17 years was $51 million plus other revenue that may be derived coming in through Gateway on non-wind related projects. And I just want to see if that's updated now that our costs are nearing a quarter of $1 billion.
Okay. Yeah. And what was the number that
you could do that? If you could do that for the whole board, Ulysses, I think everyone would appreciate that.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, next item on the agenda is consideration and approval of a resolution authorizing the designation of a new ethics liaison. I'll just introduce this item to remind folks, excuse me, that Veronica Calvert had been our ethics liaison, our ethics compliance officer, when she was here in her first iteration, in her first stint in 2020 to 2021. When she left, we then, as a board, voted to make Andrew Levine the ethics compliance officer, given that he was the only non-executive director full-time employee. And we always had the intent that when a finance director was refilled, that they would be the ethics compliance officer again. Veronica, as we've discussed, returned to the authority about 2 months ago. And we gave her a little bit of time to get her kind of feet back under her. And so we are now taking that intended action to reinstate her as ethics compliance officer. With that, I'll read the resolution. I'll entertain a motion in a second, and then we can have discussion. Resolved that Veronica Calvert is hereby reappointed to serve as ethics compliance officer of the Connecticut Port Authority, here and after referred to as the authority, pursuant to Section 1-101RR, subsection A of the General Statutes of Connecticut, in order to coordinate and monitor the development and implementation of and compliance with ethics policies and training programs for the authority, and as liaison for the authority to the Office of State Ethics, pursuant to Section 1-101RR, subsection B of the Connecticut General Statutes, in order to coordinate the development of ethics policies for the authority. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved, David.
Moved by Johnson. Is there a second?
Second, David.
Sorry, who was it? Is that Grant?
Yes.
Great. Any discussion or questions? Okay. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, next item on the agenda is the Connecticut Pilot Commission update, including an update on the administrative hearing. Ulysses, take it away.
Okay, let me give you a report, brief report on the administrative hearing. And that is with respect to the board authorized administrative hearing for the pilot who is the subject of the cargo vessel Great Comfort grounding. I must caution the board that there is little I can say that we can discuss regarding this contested case where the respondent has certain constitutional rights that must be protected prior to hearing. I can, however, and will update you on the process to date, and on the advice of counsel, refrain from discussing the substance of this matter, especially anything relative to the alleged actions of the respondent. After our last meeting, I sent a letter to the respondent pilot on July 6th advising him that the CPA board had passed a resolution authorizing the executive director to initiate a contested case administrative hearing regarding the reported grounding. He was advised of the following: that my office was preparing a hearing which would be held in accordance with the regulations of Connecticut state agencies, Sections 15 and 13, and I outlined all of the specific sections that were relevant. Also, that as part of the regulations process, he would receive a formal citation and notice of hearing once the hearing is scheduled. I also advised that the respondent that I was available if he cared to also discuss this matter. He acknowledged receipt on July 9. A contested case of this nature has not been heard in Connecticut for over 15 years, which was overseen at the time by the Department of Transportation. I have consulted with former DOT agency personnel, former pilot commissioners, and AG office personnel that could shed some light on how this type of matter was conducted. DAS has been very helpful. It's been very helpful regarding the procurement regulations and the formatting of a request for services form. As a result, and with the assistance of counsel, we have developed a formal citation and notice of hearing, as well as a request for services form that I've used to solicit potential presiding officers. Speaking of potential presiding officers, they have until this Friday the 19th to submit their request for services form and cost estimates. In the next few weeks, a hearing will be scheduled and the respondent will receive a citation and a 14-day notice of hearing. Subsequently, a decision and recommendation will be presented to the board. That is really the sum and substance of what I can share at this time.
Thank you, Ulysses. Any questions or comments from anyone on the board on that hearing process and where things stand?
Yes. I have just a couple comments. Back at our last meeting on June 21st, where we voted to move forward with the hearing, I had said how important this was, that we follow through our responsibilities of regulating pilots. And one thing I didn't mention is the Coast Guard has the ability to come in and take over if they feel a state is not doing what they're responsible for. Most hearings in the past, I've been there. I've been around. I've been on the pilot commission for, I think, 22 or 23 years. Most hearings end up taking place in about 45 days. This incident goes back quite a ways. The Coast Guard did a tremendous job in their investigation, and I have a suspicion they did it to assist the Port Authority. The Port Authority doesn't have to do a complete investigation now. They have the Coast Guard's investigation, along with what the Coast Guard would do if a pilot was operating under their federal license instead of their state pilot license. But I think the Coast Guard is watching us to see, you know, how we're doing. Are we going to live up to our responsibilities on? And so I better get moving. And that's all I want to say.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any comments?
This is John Flores. The cost for the legal stuff, where does that appear in our budget, or is that a separate thing for retention of the lawyers for the contested case? Do we know?
Yeah, so there's two different categories of expenses. I mean, one is the legal direction that we've had to get in terms of initiating and running this process, because the Port Authority had not done one before, and so we had to set up our policies essentially to do so. And then there's the expense of the hearing officer themselves. And so you'll see those two different expenses, one of which is already reflected in the legal expenses that we see. And then the cost of the hearing itself, we have not yet incurred. Ulysses, would you agree with that, or do you have anything
absolutely.
You want to add to that?
Yeah, no, that is exactly where those expenses are coming from and have been lodged. We have been in touch with counsel from the beginning on this matter because it is the first time that the CPA is proceeding along this track. And so we want to make sure that we do it and do it correctly. And so that's why we have been receiving the kind of assistance that we've needed.
Ulysses, I have no question as the need to contact the and work with the lawyers. My only point is I assume this is going to be a bit expensive, and do we have to adjust our legal budget in anticipation of what this is going to cost the Port Authority?
So far, based on the estimates that we have received to date from the potential presiding officers, the cost seems to be coming in at a very reasonable rate. And so I think we're going to be able to do this within reason and within a reasonable cost of our budget.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. Moving on to the next item on our agenda, consideration and approval of Small Harbor Improvements Projects Program, SHIP Round 3, Project List. Ulysses and Joe, hand it over to you two.
Okay. We're going to turn this over to Joe.
Well,
he's the expert.
Okay. Thank you. I guess I'd first like to thank the, under public comment, the praise for the work that's being done on SHIP. This has been many years of progress helping out the small municipalities with their maritime. So a little background on the Small Harbor Improvement Projects Program, known as SHIP. The requests for applications were issued April 27th. Applications were due July 1. Due to the July 4th holiday, applications were accepted up until close of business July 8th. What is a harbor improvement project? Connecticut General Statute, Section 13B-55AC, states harbor improvement projects include the preparation of plans, studies, and construction for the alteration and improvement of various state, municipal, and other properties in or adjacent to the waters of the state for the purpose of improving the economy and infrastructure of the state. Section 13B-56B provides any municipality may undertake a harbor improvement project, including the development, improvement, construction, and installation of berthing areas, channels to berthing areas, seawalls, piers, docks, navigation aids, bridges, and other related facilities and structures pursuant to a harbor improvement plan. The goals of the Small Harbor Improvement Projects Program is to identify which proposals best meet the definition of harbor improvement projects as outlined above that I just noted. Most importantly, to maximize the economic potential of Connecticut's ports and harbors, support and enhance the overall development of the state's maritime commerce and industries, and coordinate the planning and funding of capital projects promoting the development of the state's ports and harbors. The rating criteria that we use, proposals that meet the definition of small harbor improvement or are directly supportive of such efforts shall be rated by the authority board members or designees as deemed appropriate. So on the review team was Brian Thompson, John Johnson, Executive Director Hammond, and myself. Attachment A, which the board was given, and as well as the proposers, and it was on our website. The criteria for the program, just to name a few, local and regional supporting actions, economic and market viability, timeline to implementation, project permitted, financial impact if project grant not awarded, type of marine-related services provided by facility, stage of project planning, design, construction, or other, number of current employees and jobs created by this project. So the projects that we reviewed and are putting forward for approval are as follows. Norwich, Riverfront Pier Walkway, planning study, $45,000. Norwalk, street end, public access, planning study, $44,000. Stamford, boat ramp, I will say boat ramps, feasibility study, $20,000. Norwich, municipal marina, docks and piers, construction, $289,489. And this is to supplement the SHIP Round 2 grant that, due to the COVID time period, cost increased, and there was an addition of replacement of the piles. Stratford, emergency service dock, construction, $63,345. Stamford, Cove Island Park Municipal Marina Dredging, construction, $3,095,520. Guilford Municipal Marina Dredging, construction, $861,500. Branford Point Wharf, construction, $1 million. Stonington Town Pier Commercial Fishing Planning Study, $250,000. Stamford Cummings Marina Design Municipal Marina Planning Study, $236,500, for a total of to be approved for this this round of SHIP, $5,905,355. So that is the SHIP Round 3 criteria, background, and project listing.
Thank you, Joe. I will read the resolution, entertain a motion and second, and then we can have discussion. Resolved that the Connecticut Port Authority, hereinafter referred to as the Authority, Board of Directors endorses the Small Harbor Improvement Projects Program, hereinafter referred to as SHIP, Round 3 Project List, and the Executive Director is hereby authorized to recommend to the State Bond Commission the SHIP projects included in the form attached hereto as exhibits to agenda item number 9. And I'll just reread the total project amount for the 10 projects, $5,905,355.40. Is there a motion to approve the recommendation of those projects?
Yes, so approved.
Moved by Grant. Is there a second?
Second, Johnson.
Second by John. Any discussion?
Yeah, this is Dave Perillo. I just have a quick question for Joe. Joe, you probably remember I was involved in the first round a couple of years ago of the SHIP program. And what I remember going back to then, there was a concern that the project resulted in availability not just to residents of any particular town or city the projects were being done in, but basically open to people in general in the state of Connecticut. I assume these all meet that requirement?
Yes, Dave. Specifically when we were talking about the marinas, the boat ramps where the municipalities charge fees. I did ask every municipality when I visited them that the rates charged were equal for both an out-of-town resident and an in-town resident. And everybody has agreed to that. So we're still keeping form as to our original discussions.
That's great. How about when you talk about a municipal fishing pier? Is this a commercial fishing pier? Or I know it's a municipal pier, but is it for commercial fishing or for private, you know, pleasure fishing?
The one that's mentioned in this round, down in Stonington, they have two municipal-owned piers.
Yep.
One of the piers is leased out by commercial fishing. So the responsibility to improve or upgrade the infrastructure is on the municipality, and therefore to keep commercial fishing active in that area, they've come to us for a it's basically a design study.
Okay. Good. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate that.
Joe,
any other questions? Yeah, go ahead, Parker.
Yeah. Parker. Just remind me, when do towns offer matching funds and when do they not? I mean, the criteria for doing that?
Sure. When a town is doing a harbor management plan or update of a harbor management plan, it's a 50-50 cost share. We do not have any in this round. If they are doing a planning study, there is no cost share for that work. When it comes to construction, there is a 20% cost share, 20% on the municipality, 80% through the grant.
Great. Thank you. Got it.
Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, David, this is Felix, City of New London. Just some quick clarifications, and I do apologize if I missed it. The towns that do not qualify, did we go over those? Were those mentioned just for record? Because I know in the past it's always been a bit of a debate of taking funds from certain municipalities or revenue created from certain municipalities, especially distressed municipalities, and then taking those funds created in their homestead and taking them to other places. So can you just quickly clarify which municipalities can't qualify and the reason for that? I just want to make sure I understand that to report that back as well.
David, you want me to take that?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. The Port Authority's enabling legislation states that applications for small harbor improvement grants, there was a separate language in the enabling legislation that determined that no less than $5 million per year shall be spent on small ports and harbors, except in the cities of the deep draft ports, which is New London, New Haven, and Bridgeport. So the enabling legislation, as it was written, crafted, restricts the three deep draft ports from applying for the small harbor grant.
Got it. Understood. And can you clarify the $5 million, how that's generated and where do those funds come from? And again, I apologize if this was mentioned. I didn't hear that clearly on my end.
Yeah.
State bond funds, Felix.
Yes.
It's all state bond funds.
Correct.
Okay.
Other questions or comments? Okay, all those in favor of the SHIP project list, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, I know we're coming up on time, but I ask that folks just give us a few more minutes. We've got two quick old business items, and then I have a new business item to suggest. So first, an old business on executive director search update. There was a request for an update on this. I'll just note that I've spoken with both Brian and Judy, and this will be the focal agenda item of our HR committee, which is 1 month from today. Any questions or comments on that at this time? Okay, and the other item on old business, we've discussed this a bit in the past, and, you know, COVID has kind of kept coming back, but now is a good time as any, as folks have requested that we talk about future meeting format. So with that, you know, I open it up if anyone has a comment or something that they'd like to say about, you know, how we do future meetings, Zoom versus, you know, phone versus hybrid versus in-person.
Dave Perillo, David, thanks for bringing this up. I think we're at the point of getting back to in-person meetings. I mean, there's no current restrictions. You can go to theater, you can go to concerts with 15,000 people. The CDC lifted just about everything earlier in the week. I'd love to see us back to in person. I think it just adds to transparency. I'd like to see the other board members be able to maybe talk to them before or after the meeting, and I think the public would like to see us. So I'd like to go back in person.
Well said.
Anyone else have any thoughts?
David, this is Felix from the city. I'm fine with the in-person. I mean, I think there should be some level of transition. I know we've got people from both sides of the state, and, you know, driving an hour and a half, maybe just not something someone can do in the middle of an afternoon on a Tuesday from Bridgeport down to New London or vice versa. I think as long as we find a location that most people can make, that, you know, maybe the hybrid can be utilized, where in person and people can zoom in, where, you know, digital face-to-face is still possible. I still think that should be an option that's left on the table before we go fully in person. That's just from my end.
Our meetings in the past, We're in various cities, not only port cities, various cities in towns around the state to try to make it fair to everybody. Obviously, one particular location in the middle of the state may require everybody traveling a long distance. I think if we hold it in our deep water ports and other cities and towns. We even had them in a little town like Old Lyme. I think that worked fine, and quite frankly, I don't recall any complaints.
Right. Hi, this is Judy. Also, given that we're not meeting every month, we were doing those statewide board meetings when we were meeting every month, so it's certainly not that much of a burden if we had to travel four times a year.
Yeah, and a balance may be having the committee meetings in the months when there's not a board meeting, having those be remote only, so that it is in every other month travel. I'm open to whatever the board desires. Anyone else want to share thoughts on this?
This is Paul Hinch. I agree with Felix. I think, you know, to start out, maybe a hybrid. I'll probably attend in person, but I think it does give more folks and certainly more opportunity to attend.
So, David, I would have a question. Do we have room enough in our headquarters, in our office, to meet there and accommodate them some public?
That's a tough call. You know, I think it totally depends on the number of public, and I think we would have to be limiting, and I would rather hold it someplace that we didn't have to turn people away, obviously. So I think it would be too constricting.
Okay.
Any other comments?
Hey, David, it's Brian Thompson. So, yeah, I think in person is a good idea. You know, we always sort of had a hybrid meeting anyway, in that we had
the
ability to call in. It can be a little awkward for the person or persons calling in or trying to join virtually, but I still think that's an option that we should maintain. Whether we make that, you know, through Zoom or some other, you know, video conferencing platform is another question, and may kind of limit to some extent the venues that we can use for meetings, but still something we should move forward with.
Yeah.
My experience with in-person and Zoom meeting, it's very difficult for the people on Zoom to actually hear the people in person. We've always been frustrated on using both in person with Zoom. I mean, if we need to find another means with the in person, maybe the phone is the best way to go.
Yeah, I think multiple microphones is key if you're trying to do that, so that, you know, when you have a table spread out with people, that there's input for audio at different locations. Other thoughts or comments?
Yeah, David, it's Carlo.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm open to doing in-person meetings, but I think having the flexibility for those who might not be able to make it for whatever reason, whether it's middle of the workday or distance from locations, et cetera, that you still have the flexibility to log in one way or another, so that whoever can't make it could then still participate, and then use that going forward to see how those future meetings work for everyone. And then at such time, we can then decide whether it needs to be permanent in terms of keeping the flexibility or not. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah.
Can we also maybe think about the time of our meetings? We schedule this particular, the full board meeting at noon. How about early evening? You know, that might be better for not only the members of the board, but the member of the public.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly open to discuss timing. I think getting outside of the business hours, while I understand might be easier for some members of the public, is going to be harder for board participation. I don't know of any other quasi that meets outside of 9 to 5, but I could be wrong about that. But we'll put that in the mix of
interfere with a cocktail.
The New Haven Port Authority has always met in the early evenings, and they have quite a crowd appearing. So just wanted to add that.
Well, actually, this is Judy. That was actually to make sure that we accommodated the public, who, if they were working, would not be able to leave to come to our board meetings. And actually, that's true of all City of New Haven board meetings. They either meet first thing in the morning at 8 or at 5:30 in the evening or later. So that may be just specific to New Haven.
Okay, any other comments? Right. Any other old business? Okay, new business. I would like to suggest that we take one thing up. I wasn't sure what sort of attendance we were going to get with it being mid-August, but since we do have robust board attendance with the recent vacancy of the vice chair position, I would like to make a motion that we take up consideration of chair and vice chair as a special item not on the agenda. Is there a second to take that item up as new?
I'll second that, David.
Second by John. Any discussion on taking the item up as new business? Okay, all those in favor of taking up the item, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, I'll start by inviting motions for chair. Is there a
Mr.
motion
chair,
for chair?
This is Paul Hinch. I'd like to make a motion to reelect David Corris as chair of the Connecticut Port Authority's Board of Directors.
Second, Tom.
Is there a second? Second by Tom. Is there any other motion for chair? Any other motion for chair? Okay, any discussion?
Do you want the job again?
I am willing to do it for another 2 years to see
good.
Some of this stuff through.
That's good. That's good.
So this is Judy, David. I just have a question. Is your term up now? Is that why this is being considered?
Yeah, so, both chair and vice chair were actually up a few months ago, and we just hadn't acted on it yet. And so with the vice chair becoming vacant, that is the impetus to do both. And we might as well bring the chair in compliance at the same time.
And we don't have a secretary or treasurer. We don't have those.
We do not. We do not. That's certainly something that...
Certainly, the secretary, does the chair serve as the secretary then to actually certify any documents? I mean, typically, the secretary is the one who would be signing agendas and documents that are certified.
Yeah, you know, I know with Robert's rules, at a committee level, the chair serves as secretary.
Okay.
I guess if there's not one on the board, it's certainly something that we can look at the bylaws. We don't have those seats currently as officers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Just a question.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to look into that. Any other discussion? Okay. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
Dave Perillo, I'm opposed.
Any abstentions? Okay. As chair, I'll make a motion to elect Grant Westerson as vice chair. Is there a second?
I'll second that, David.
Second by John. Any other nominations for vice chair? Any other nominations? Okay, any discussion? I'll just note, having made the motion, you know, I think as evidenced by today's meeting and the importance of SHIP and the community response that we received, the small and working harbors are clearly of vital importance and of vital interest to our constituents, and so I think for this one-year term, Grant is a great nominee to be able to represent that angle on our board, and that was the impetus for my making that motion. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you all for taking that up, and thank you all for your continued confidence in me, and thank you, Grant, for your willingness to support the authority in that role. Any other new business?
Yeah, Dave Perillo, I have just one thing to briefly bring up now. I want the board to know that Judy Scheifel and I had passed on six items for the agenda. following the proper procedures, bylaws, and see that everything, with the exception of one, has been discussed. And the last one I want to discuss is the email that we got regarding the ethics findings and the letter that was sent to Senator Kelly and Formica on the ethics findings. I've just got some things that are just troubling to me on this. Number one, our chair was aware of the individual in the issues back in July of 2019. I'm sure he was, because I met with him July 30th at 11 a.m. in your office at DOT, David. We were having a meeting between Bill Gash of the Maritime Coalition, myself and you, and I had met with you privately before that, and I pretty much, since I became aware of what had happened too, said, this has to be dealt with. And the last thing I think you sent to me is, I know, and you might have said it was up to the executive director. He manages staff. But I do have to point out that at that time, you were acting chair. And in lieu of no executive director, you were acting executive director. And you didn't really write about this until a couple weeks ago by the board. And I think in the interest of transparency, things like this should be addressed promptly. Just like the executive director, Henshaw, submitted record resignation in September and were advised in March. And in the meantime, you asked the board to approve a salary increase for the guy after he had already submitted his resignation. We should have known. There's some items you brought to our attention yesterday, and one of them dates back to October of 21, and the other one was March of 22. And these should have been brought to our attention immediately. We are not a board of
they
one.
Were. You should check your, email. Those were all brought to your attention at the time.
I've gone through my emails, David. I've gone through every meeting. I've gone through every set of notes I took in executive session. And as far as the ethics ruling, there was a discussion about the former executive director, but nothing about anything else. And I just think we need more information promptly in the interest of transparency. And we are a board. Collectively, we are not a board of one. We need to know too. So I would hope in the next that will improve.
Great. Thanks for the comments. Any other new business anyone would like to bring up? Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Johnson.
But Johnson, is there a second?
Second, Hinch.
Second.
Okay, second by Paul and Parker. Thank you, everyone, for participating. I'm sorry we went a little bit long, and look forward to seeing everyone in person sometime soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, everyone. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you for it again.